This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Mickey Kaus is back with us. He writes the Kaus Files weblog, or blog, for Slate.com. A weblog, we repeat, is a series of daily personal essays on the internet with links to other sites. Mickey, welcome back.
Thanks, Alex.
Topics of note this week on weblogs include a special weblog edition of Newsweek, and in this series of pieces, the name Mohammed Atta. The famed leader of the September 11th terrorist attacks, Mohammed Atta's name comes up again.
Well, that's right. Michael Isikoff and Mark Hosenball are two of Newsweek's veteran reporters, and Newsweek has given them a web-only feature called Terror Watch, which they have used to bat down the recrudescence of this rumor that Mohammed Atta met with Iraqi agents in Prague before 9/11, which would, of course, link Saddam with 9/11, which most people thought that link had gone away and this Atta meeting in Prague had been discredited, but a very diligent and smart web writer and book writer named Edward J. Epstein sort of revived this theory on his website and in Slate.com, and it was picked up by William Sapphire in the New York Times. That's an interesting debate that could go either way, I think, but it's interesting that it's being prosecuted sort of subterraneanly on the web.
Okay. Another name, Paul Krugman. Now, Paul Krugman is the Princeton economist who also writes two columns a week for the New York Times. He's one of the most influential media voices today, and he has this recent book out. And you note that there's been a little furor about this book, and this furor originated on the web from this, I think, fairly obscure Australian economics professor who, thanks to the web, is able to get into the argument.
He noticed that the cover of the international edition, unlike the American edition, is virulently anti-Bush. It shows a picture of Bush sort of portrayed as a baseball with hideous Frankenstein-like stitching across his face, and Cheney with a Got Oil mustache that looks suspiciously like a Hitler mustache. These mainly are images from puppets at an anti-globalization protest at a World Economic Forum in which Krugman was a participant, not a protester.
And the Australian economist who brings us to our attention is saying there's something kind of duplicitous about this from this mainstream, very important New York Times writer.
Well, Krugman has sort of at least two sides. He's a very respectable, brilliant, Nobel Prize-level economist, and yet he is also this anti-Bush preacher in the New York Times, and this was an attempt to embarrass him by saying, look, you're really just pandering to anti-Bush hatred as opposed to being the sophisticated economist that you sometimes seem to be, and it sort of forced him to say, do you really approve of this, what I think is an obnoxious cover? His response was, I think it was intended to be ironic. Now, it's pretty clear looking at this cover that it wasn't intended to be ironic. It was intended to say, here's an anti-Bush book. Now, I think it's possible that Krugman was ironic when he said it was intended to be ironic, that he was making a joke, and that the Times account that where he was quoted just didn't make that clear.
Okay, finally, and one last story that you notice on the web this week, a story that suggests that perhaps the blog, which is your own favorite form of expression right now, is doomed. In fact, the blogs aren't going to be around much longer. Tell me about this.
A columnist named John Dvorak of PC Magazine wrote a piece sort of trying to puncture the blogging craze. He made two points. One, that people are abandoning blogs at a great rate. And the second point he makes is the blogging phenomenon is being co-opted by established media. So as we discussed, Newsweek has a blog, The Washington Post has a blog, ABC has a blog, and that eventually the bloggers we read will all be getting paid by Microsoft, for God's sakes, or some
who can imagine such a thing?
Some big faceless corporation. It'll be the same old junk.
I'll just note that Slate, where Kaus Files appears, actually is owned by Microsoft.
I think this man's an idiot because he admits that the new amount of new bloggers has exceeded so far the amount of bloggers who have abandoned blogging. So the number has gone up from 4 million to 5 million, which is not indicative of a dying form.
No, point number one would seem to be contradicted by his own figures. Point number two is the idea of the blog in danger of being co-opted by big media groups.
I think it's much more likely that blogging will humanize big media. If you look at ABC's blog, The Note, it's not a faceless corporate blog. It's a highly personal, idiosyncratic, eccentric piece of writing that you would never see on network television. It's really good. And I think the lesson of blogging is that even large faceless corporations can actually turn out good stuff in this form because they basically don't know how to control it yet.
Because the thing about blogs that remains so interesting and so intellectually dangerous about them is that they exist pretty much without editing. The best of them, you say, and in your own case, are completely unedited. It is, in fact, the genuine ideas of the writer, not the ideas of an editorial committee that belongs to a corporation that's trying to do what's acceptable.
I think that's right. I think the lack of editing is key. And if corporations decide they have to edit, well, then we have independent non-corporate blogs like Instapundit, who's the most powerful blogger, who's a law professor at the University of Tennessee, not affiliated with any giant corporation, and they'll still exist, and they'll still be unedited. So I think it's a hard form to kill. I don't think it'll ever be stamped out completely, and as this guy's figures show, it's growing. It's not shrinking.
All right, dear listeners, you can check Mickey Kaus's blog, KausFiles@slate.com. Mickey will be back in a couple of weeks to update the world of blogs. Mickey Kaus, thanks for coming in again.
Thanks, Alex.